You're listening to the Master Passive Income Podcast Network.
Hey there, and welcome to our Equity Builders Club pre-event webinar. These events, these webinars are free and they're given every night before we have an in-person networking event. So that's happening tomorrow evening at the University Club in Montreal. And the purpose of these webinars is to dive into a topic that I find is, you know, top of mind and really relevant for people who are looking to do deals in the Montreal area right now. And the topic of the networking event and of this webinar this month is too competitive for good deals. And at least two or three times a week, I end up talking to investors who are looking to do deals in the market. And there's a lot of doom and gloom around the fact that there are no deals that make sense. So there's no deals that cash flow. There's nothing interesting available on the market. Basically, there's no good deals left. And what I find interesting is that this really contrasts with my own personal experience. So I've done 4 multifamily deals since the beginning of the year before I'm about to go on summer break now. So there's going to be a little summer hiatus. But my students as well have been doing deals in the last 4 months. And so it really, you know, that doom and gloom really contrasts with what I'm seeing on the ground, both for myself and for the members of our Equity Builders coaching program. And so I just wanted to go through and put some information out there that might help you approach looking at the market in a different way. And so what I want to do in this webinar is to give you some hope, some inspiration that the opportunities are out there. You just have to know how to look for them.
Welcome to the Real Escape Investing Podcast, where we guide you to escape the constraints of time, geography, and finance through real estate. And now here's your host, Terry Schauer.
Hey, real estate fans, I have exciting news to share with you. Our monthly in-person networking events are back. If you're in the Montreal area, and even if you're not, go ahead and grab a ticket for our next event at equitybuildersclub.com/events. I would love to see you out.
So one of the other myths that really like runs together with this idea that there's, you know, no good deals left on the open market anymore is that all the good deals are done off market. And I will tell you, this is 100% false, or maybe 80, 85% false. So a lot of people who are looking to invest believe that there are no good deals left on the MLS. And the result, or the fact is that the market isn't dead, it's just inefficient. And the inefficiency creates opportunities for people who are equipped with the eyes to see what a good deal looks like on MLS. Now, for sure, if the listing broker has done a super job and the property is really A1, that is going to be an efficient market situation in which the price is going to be listed pretty high. All the rents and prospective rents for vacant units are going to be exactly spot on. The pictures are going to be beautiful and everything is going to look perfect and enticing on that listing. And the fact is that on the MLS, you're going to be looking for inefficiencies. And that means you're going to be looking for those brokers who have listed assets, not knowing what proper market rents are, not understanding how to make that listing stand out for its proper value, and that's going to then decrease the amount of offers. But so just to give you an idea of all of my deals that I've done this year, they were all done on the MLS, and actually 2 of them were pretty much cash flowing immediately from the get-go. So that gives you an idea that there are still good deals available on the MLS today. It's just a question of being able to spot them. Now, as I mentioned earlier, part of what we're trying to do when we look at the deals that are available on the MLS is to spot what I like to call listing anomalies. And so these will be subtle red flags in a listing that would make less experienced investors turn away, but that might actually signal either, you know, additional negotiating power, which means that the price that's listed on the MLS is actually not the price that it's going to sell at, or that the listing broker has done something that's going to somehow turn a lot of people away in a, you know, perhaps unrealistic way. So, you know, very simply, if it's a smaller investment property, poor photography will really get a lot of inexperienced investors out of the game. And this is perhaps less true on, you know, those 5 or 6 unit properties, but definitely on the triplex and fourplex in that zone. A broker who has, you know, snapped photos with their cell phone or who hasn't spent time like staging some of those units is really hurting his listing. And some of the best deals that I've seen my clients and, you know, some of my students do on those smaller buildings has to do with properties that are just not set up in the most attractive way possible. So like ugly photos should actually almost attract you to something because it means that a lot of other investors are going to gloss over that property. Now, for sure, on bigger properties, so like 5-plexes, 6-plexes, 8-plexes, you know, typically the photography aspect is just really like less of a deal because maybe you won't even have any photos of interiors whatsoever, or you might have, you know, photos of the one unit that actually looks good. So the photos play a smaller role in bigger properties, but nonetheless, that's still, it still does play a role. What I would say is one of the main factors that we see that turns people away from those deals that are good deals is the underestimating of market rents. And so our rental market has evolved so quickly in Montreal at the moment that if a broker's rental data is even 1 year out of whack, it means that they're going to be underestimating any vacant units, the rents on that by, you know, a margin of $200 or $300. And on a building metric, that's huge because what happens when investors are looking through properties is that they're just glancing over the listed revenues. And if for some reason those revenues are artificially low because a broker underestimated the rental value of a unit, it means that like people who are looking quickly are just going to get turned off right away because some of those numbers just aren't not as attractive and they're also not realistic. And the other thing that I would say is that what you see on the listing and what you see when you actually physically go to the property are two completely different things. And I will tell you that of the 4 deals that I've done this year, in 2 of them, when I went to the visit, I discovered that there were tenants leaving. And the listing broker and the owner seem to not even know about it. So I go in, I visit the building, and then, you know, the tenants start telling me that they're leaving during the visit. So that was not visible on the MLS listing, but nonetheless, that listing was on the MLS. So sometimes sliding in an offer on a property that financially its metrics look a little bit less interesting, when you actually put your feet in there, sometimes you can discover something completely different. So it's really that being able, the secret to being able to do good deals on market is to be able to spot those listing anomalies that for some reason other investors glossed over super quickly. Now, the next aspect of this is to craft offers that win, because the reality of today's market is that probably you're not going to be alone when there's an attractive deal that comes up. So even if you are able to spot that listing anomaly, perhaps there's going to be 2 or 3 offers and you're going to be bidding against other investors who are out there. And so I will say that the first thing is, you know, to be aware of the number of offers. Like just generally, you know, having been on both sides of this game, so on the buying side when I'm one offer of many, or on the selling side when I'm liquidating something and I'm waiting for those offers to come in, you know, if there are 3 offers, that sure as heck doesn't mean there are 3 good offers. Typically, like out of 3 offers, there will be 2 that are below listing price and 1 comes in at listing price or above it. So don't be fooled by the number of offers. It's really false to think that all the offers are good, but when there are multiple offers, like don't be silly and offer, you know, $80K under asking. You're just wasting everybody's time by doing that. Like if there are multiple offers, my suggestion would be you do need to come in like minimal yet asking to even have it be competitive whatsoever. And then what I will say is that the offers that end up getting picked rarely have to do only just with price. And so especially on investment properties, like we think that, oh, it's just all about putting additional money down. But I will tell you, for having been on the liquidating side of assets, when we receive those offers, you know, my broker and I will sit down and talk through who we should answer. And the fact of price actually ends up just being one factor out of 3 that I would say are super crucial. Now, the first one has to do with financing, because with financing, especially in the multifamily phase, the delays and the uncertainty is really quite large. And so obviously we will prefer a cash offer or an offer that is subject to private financing. So those delays are like a cash offer has no financing condition whatsoever. And a private lender might have like a 1 week financing delay. And we also know that for private lenders, the hoops that the buyer has to drive through, has to jump through are like quite small. So that's going to be the most attractive offer. Now, typically those cash and private lender offers are like usually discounted. So it's this principle that money right now is worth, like a building right now is worth less if you can close tomorrow than it is if you have to wait a month or 90 days even to close it. And so that will usually be the way the offers are structured. So the cash offers and the private lender's offers are usually the cheapest. So they're offering the least amount of money. After that comes the like residential slash financial offers. So as we know, there are some banks, so the CIBC, RBC, and especially Desjardins, who have gone after the small multifamily market segment and will do financing, Desjardins, for example, up to eightplexes. And so the great thing about that for both buyers and sellers in the small multifamily market segment is that that allows you to close with almost a residential delay. So typically those kind of files will have a 3 week financing delay. So if you are a seller and you're trying to come in and lock down a property, if you are able to come in with private financing delay or even that residential financing delay, that's then an extremely attractive offer for a seller, because it means that really the answer of whether or not the building is going to be sold is going to happen really quickly. And the close is going to also be very quick. Now, the difference between those two types of offers is it's also giving the seller some information about the type of investor profile that the buyer has. Because somebody who's coming in with one of those like residential financings typically is going to be a less experienced investor. It's not going to be someone who does that as their main gig, because if you're able to use residential financing to close on a multifamily property, it's probably because you're not a full-time investor and you're not so leveraged that the banks don't want to deal with you anymore. So the other thing that like we're checking as sellers in the multifamily market is we're trying to assess the level of seriousness of the potential buyer. And, you know, typically like seasoned investors are just going to like mess around less. And so that means that they're going to probably nickel and dime less after inspections. They're going to, if they say they're going to close, probably they are going to close. Like there's just less cold feet. And a less experienced buyer, so somebody who comes in with one of those like residential mortgages, you know, even before the visit takes place, that if the building looks like it needs a little bit more attention or management skill or that kind of stuff, that kind of a buyer might be more likely to, you know, either get out at the time of inspection or at the time of visiting the units, or else to renegotiate after inspection or get cold feet just because they're worried. And then the absolute last, so the type of offer that us as people liquidating multifamily offers, we really don't want to see, is that CMHC offer with a 90 or 120 day financing delay. Because what all of us sitting there are thinking when we're liquidating a building is that basically like we don't have access to that capital for that full financing period. So I know, because I am purchasing with CMHC financing, that if I agree to someone buying from me with it, it means that like really realistically I'm closing like in 5 months. And so that opens two sets of risks for me. The first one is the opportunity cost that I don't have access to my capital for a really long time. And the next one is that I don't control what happens in the next 5 months. And Lord knows the last 5 years, we've seen enough volatility kind of go back and forth where like interest rates go crazy, you know, COVID, wars, instability, changing regimes and government, you know, south of the border, north of the border, tariff wars, all these different things means that like we're kind of in a phase where there's a lot of economic instability. And this means that, you know, interest rates can really take a bounce. And then the deal you thought you'd negotiated 4 months ago all of a sudden makes no sense and the whole thing blows up and you're stuck with your asset. So being able to close quickly is definitely an advantage. And it's something that, you know, us as people who are selling multifamily assets, like we're willing to take that discount. We're willing to take that hit to be able to deal with someone who can close quickly. And so be aware that if you are trying to be competitive with a CMHC, like longer term offer, you are going to have to put more money on the table because you're going to have to hedge that time delay and that risk, that means that you're only going to be closing in 5 months. And so you're going to have to put something else on the table. So it's kind of false to say that multifamily overbidding wars are really just a question of price. They're not. Really, those other like things that you're building into your offer, especially around those financing delays, are of real big importance. And the other thing is also what the seller's read is of your level of experience as an investor. And that's something that your broker should be pitching. So if you're, you know, trying to win an offer and there are maybe, you know, two or three other experienced investors, you definitely want your broker to be selling you as somebody who's serious and who, you know, is a reliable investor who will be able to close. And then, you know, the other thing that comes up often is this fact of like waiving various conditions. And so like, obviously, you know, you're not going to be waiving your right to visit. You're not going to be waiving your due diligence in terms of inspecting the leases and stuff like that. The one thing that people sometimes do waive is the inspection. And, you know, it's in the broker's code of ethics to not recommend that their clients waive inspections. But I will tell you that, you know, as a buyer in a competitive market, from time to time, I've waived inspections, but I've done it in a way that's helped to mitigate that risk. And whether it means that I actually pay my inspector to come to the visit with me, and even if I'm not getting a written up inspection report, like if we're spending an hour and a half poking around in the building with my inspector, the verbal rundown that he's going to give me after, and like, I just need to hit record on some kind of device, and I pretty much almost have an inspection report. So, you know, obviously if you're like waiving your right to inspection, you can't have somebody there taking all kinds of pictures and like quietly putting together an inspection report, but you can definitely pay a professional to accompany you on that visit and get to the data that you would get to with an inspection. And then what's the, you know, interest of this as a seller? Like, why do I want to accept an offer that has no inspection? Well, there are two reasons. The first one is that it means that there's not going to be renegotiation. Because once the person has done the visit, that's the end of it. And so the price that they're proposing is not like a price to get the property under contract, and then they're just going to renegotiate everything. So when there's no inspection, it means that the seller can expect less negotiation. And then the other thing is that you don't have an inspection report. Because the other risk for a seller is that if you have an inspection report that's listing all of the various little problems or big problems that the building has, you then have to declare those problems to any potential seller that comes, to any potential buyer that comes along after your current offer tanks. And so you as a buyer can really put the seller in a very difficult position if you have an inspection report that's detailing different problems with their property, because it means that either they transact with you and you get to negotiate a big price reduction, or else everybody else who comes along, they have to mention that inspection report and then declare why the previous offers tanked. And so like when a seller agrees to an inspection, they're actually kind of putting themselves and their asset at risk. So, you know, you waiving the right to the inspection really has value to the seller just because you're taking risk off the table for them. And you're also taking away the fact that you might be renegotiating after the fact. So that's to know when it comes to waiving conditions. You know, the inspection is probably just about the only condition that you can waive. And you can also like mitigate that by bringing along either an experienced contractor or ideally your building inspector to the property visit in the first place. You know, webinar about a competitive market would be complete without actually talking a little bit about off markets. And so I do want to spend a little bit of time talking about that just to make sure that all of you really understand the players who have off markets. So there's really, you know, three ways in which people come about off markets, and there will be a different kind of actors. So there will be the wholesalers, and wholesalers in Canada, we don't live in an environment really of door knocking the way that these wholesalers operate in the US. It's more a question of doing large mass marketings and sending letters to building owners. And like, again, Lord knows, I own enough assets now to know that these wholesalers, I'm getting a couple of letters from these large scale prospectors, whether they're people who are wholesaling or people who are investing themselves, I get a couple of those letters a week. And to be honest, a lot of the pro wholesalers that we see as market actors now in Montreal are people who have investment portfolios themselves. So they're constantly like prospecting, and then whatever deals they don't want or they can't handle because it's just too much, they will then wholesale those to other colleagues or investors. And so the way the wholesale deal typically works is that, for example, the asset, a good deal on the asset would be $1 million. Well, the wholesaler managed to get the seller to agree to sell it for 800. And then they're going to shop it around to you at that $1 million mark. So basically, they get to keep that 200K of the arbitrage between what they convinced the seller to sell for and what they're going to wholesale the deal to you at. So wholesalers can really make a lot of money, but be aware that building that kind of a prospecting engine, it's actually a business. So this is not something that you can kind of like turn around and be like, oh, I'm going to send 100 letters and then all of a sudden I'm going to have access to these great off-market deals. That is a business model in itself, and it involves doing a bunch of homework and kind of building that out, you know, as a business. And then dealing with these wholesalers. So you know, I also get wholesalers kind of coming to talk to me and offering me some of these deals that they've managed to get under contract. But now where, you know, I find that it's difficult to do business with wholesalers is that they will usually ask for you to put down some kind of a non-refundable deposit in that due diligence period. So you'll get to, you know, visit the property and like do all these other kind of things. But because that offer is so valuable to them, they can't afford to have you, you know, just take it over and then potentially not close on it. So they will ask you for a non-refundable deposit, and then that's a non-refundable deposit. So if for whatever reason you back out or your financing doesn't come through, well, then you're out whatever money you put down. So, you know, and then there's also the fact of hoping that, you know, when the seller goes to the notary and like notices what has happened, like the chances that that transaction goes sideways are just higher than a normal transaction, because basically the way that the wholesaler makes his money is because he's created this arbitrage situation where the seller is getting like a low amount of money. You're paying basically market value and the wholesaler is keeping the difference. So believe me, the seller is not going to be happy when they figure out what's going on and that they learn that their deal has been wholesaled to someone else and that somebody's keeping hundreds of thousands of dollars as the middleman. So that kind of has a high percentage of chance of kind of blowing up on you. And, you know, I will say the same thing. So there's, when we talk about pocket listings, right? So like pocket listings, what's a pocket listing? It's a broker who has gotten a deal usually under contract and is then shopping it around to a select group of investors. So the advantage of this is that you do get to make an offer typically all alone. So you're not in that situation where you're bidding against other people, or there might be like one other person who's in the running, but like usually it allows you to transact in peace without that multiple offer situation. But what I will say is about those pocket listing situations is that often either the seller's kind of a special animal or else the broker in the middle is kind of a special animal. Because when you think about like, why might someone have a pocket listing when the best price and the easiest transaction is available on market? It's available on the MLS. There's no doubt about that. So why would you be transacting in a pocket listing situation? Well, either it's because the seller's so weird that they don't want their market, their property hitting the open market, even though that's the way to get the best price. And I've dealt with some people like that. So it means that there's something going on with the seller that means that they don't want to list in a public way. Or else the broker has the incentive because they are going to keep the full amount of the commission. So they're going to keep the 4% commission. They're not going to have to split their 4% with the other broker that's going to come along on market. And so that means they get to control the transaction, first of all, because you're not going to be represented. You're going to come in there and there's only one broker. You're not going to have your representing broker. So it means they get to control the transaction. It means that they get to keep the whole commission. So that's an advantage for the broker who has the pocket listing, but it's probably not to the best advantage of the seller, because the seller will get the best price on market. They're not going to get it off market, because who's ever shopping off market is hoping for a deal. So the chances are that they're going to be negotiating down. So just be aware that like those pocket listing situations, like you're going to be, there's going to be at least one, if not two special animals in between you and the transaction there. So while you can get a deal that ultimately is going to end up just kind of matching market metrics, you're going to have to deal with a bunch of complication because there's going to be complicated humans in your way. And then for those of us who don't have those prospecting engines, the other two ways that people get access to off-market deals is going to be through a bird dog. So a bird dog is like somebody who brings deals to investors, and they are not doing this for free, but they're also not real estate brokers. So like usually they will have a network of other brokers who have pocket listings, or they will have some kind of way of prospecting themselves, and they will then charge like usually a 2% fee on that transaction. And so they're not representing you. So the only service that they're providing is to put you in touch with those off-market sellers or those brokers who have pocket listings. And these are typically people who like have human relationships that just allows them to have that big footprint. And it can be interesting as an investor to have a relationship with one or two bird dogs like this, who's able to bring you those off-market deals. Like I have done a couple deals like that in the past. They have usually ended up being more complicated than the deals that I would do on market, but you can still find good deals that way. Probably not insanely market beating, because don't forget that you're still going to have to grease everybody's palms, right? Like you're going to have to kick 2% to the bird dog. Probably you're going to have to kick another percentage to the broker who has the pocket listing. If there's someone who has a pocket listing, or if there's a wholesaler on the other side, you're still paying middlemen. And so often like paying those middlemen is actually going to be the difference between making that offer, you know, really interesting for you and not. And a lot of the times I've passed on those bird dog deals just because kicking that 2% to somebody makes it that the deal is just less interesting than what I could find on market. And then the final way that you can find actually probably the best off markets, and this is where I've seen my students and clients of mine and colleagues of mine do the best deals, is on this like small scale where they're talking to neighbors or they're talking to family members who have assets to offload, and that this like real person-to-person relationship becomes a way to access true off-market deals where you're just transacting human to human. And there's no bird dog or wholesaler or real estate broker in between the two of you. And so, you know, this is not a scale that tends to work on a large scale, right? Like you can't massively farm your family connections or like your neighborhood. You only have so many footprints. But for smaller investors, this can be really a great way to find some good deals and to also have just pleasant transactions. And I know that, you know, when I'm in the process of liquidating an asset, depending on the type of asset, sometimes the first thing I will do is go and propose it to the neighbors. And either they can close on it or they can't. But that ends up being, for me, both of us, for the buyer and the seller, often the most pleasant way of doing a deal and a great way to access off markets. And the same thing holds really for, you know, family connections, because sometimes, you know, there's an older person in your, you know, immediate or extended family or on your in-law side that wants to get rid of something. And they're happy to kind of keep that in the family and have the asset transition down the generations. And so that can be a good way to get a good deal, but to also have them feel like that asset continues its life within the life of the family. So in a nutshell, that is kind of how I feel like you can approach the current market and get out of some of this doom and gloom, this idea that there are just no good deals, there are no cash flowing deals out there anymore. I do think that those deals are out there. I think it just takes a little bit of intelligence and insight to even understand what you're looking at. And so the very first thing is obviously to just explode that myth that there are no good deals available on market and there are no more good deals out there. So hopefully that this webinar has taken you a little bit on that road and you can return to the world of investing with a little bit less doom and gloom. And obviously by being a member of the Equity Builders Club community, coming to our networking events, or else perhaps learning a little bit more about the type of mentorship that we offer and seeing how we coach our students through this process to make sure that they really are having some of those mental shifts to really be able to spot those deals that are out there today. Just perhaps they're not screaming good deal, because that's just not how markets work, right? Like obviously you as the investor have to create some of that. You have to do some work to be able to put together winning offers, and then also to know what assets to be offering on in the first place. So if that's of interest to you, please go ahead in the rest of this, the email that's going to come as a thank you after you watch this webinar, there's going to be an opportunity to sign up for a discovery call. And so you can learn a little bit more about what we do at the Equity Builders Club to help you close on your next property that's going to be a good deal, just like myself and the people who are coming through our mentorship program currently. So thanks so much for listening. And if you want to share this with anybody else, please go ahead and share it with someone who you think could profit from lifting a bit of that doom and gloom about what's going on in our current market.
The second exciting thing is that we still have a few more coaching spots available in our next cohort. If you would like to have a little bit more help closing on that next property, please go ahead and fill out the contact form on equitybuildersclub.com and we would be happy to jump on a call and explain to you a little bit more about what we do.
Thank you for listening to the Real Escape Investing Podcast. I'm your host, Terry Schauer. If you find that this show has been useful to you, if you've enjoyed the content, if it's done anything to move the needle for you, please go ahead and share it with one person who you think could profit from listening to it. Until next time, real estate fans.